Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 64, The Deliverance of King Nriga, text number 29. Namaste Sarvabhavaya. Brahmane Nantashaktiye. Krishnaya Vasudevaya. Yuganang Pateye Namaha. Namaste Sarvabhavaya. Brahmane Nantashaktiye. Krishnaya Vasudevaya. Yuganang Pateye Namaha. Others? Maharishis?
Namaste Sarvabhavaya.
Brahmane Nantashaktiye. Krishnaya Vasudevaya. Yoganam Pataye Namaha. Namaha. Obeisances. Hey, unto you, Sarvabhavaya, the source of all beings, Brahmane, the supreme absolute truth, Ananta, unlimited, Shaktaye, the possessor of potencies, Krishnaya, to Krishna, Vasudevaya, the son of Vasudev, Yoganam, of all processes of yoga, Pataye, to the Lord, Namaha, obeisances. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. I offer my repeated obeisances unto you, Krishna, the son of Vasudev. You are the source of all beings, the supreme absolute truth, the possessor of unlimited potencies, the master of all spiritual disciplines. Please repeat, I offer my repeated obeisances unto you. Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, you are the source of all beings, the absolute truth, the possessor of unlimited potencies, the master of all spiritual disciplines. Kind of sounds like in Gita where Krishna, or Arjuna says, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam, Purusham Shashvatam Devyam, Aridevam Ajam. Kind of reminds me of that. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada's purport. What do you say? Srila Prabhupada's report. Oh, thank you for the correction. I don't think I've ever given a Bhagavatam class this far in the Bhagavatam. Thank you. So this was collaboration of Sri Dayananda Maharaj and Gopi Pranadan. It's wonderful. There was always some controversy from time to time whether we stop where Prabhupada stopped, but you went on. I think that's wonderful. Now I love what was done, and you're clearly empowered. But thank you for the correction. Srila Sridhar Swami comments that King Nriga offers his obeisances unto Brahman, that is, the absolute truth, who is unchanged in spite of performing activities. Since ancient times, Western philosophers have puzzled over the question of how God can be unchanging and yet perform activities. Sridhar Swami states that this doubt is answered here by the term Ananta Shaktiye, which describes the Lord as the possessor of unlimited potency. Thus, through the Lord's infinite potencies, he can perform innumerable activities without changing his essential nature. The king further offers his obeisances unto Sri Krishna, the possessor of the form of eternal bliss and supreme goal of life. The holy name of Krishna is analyzed in a verse in the Mahabharata, Udyoga Parva 71.4, which Srila Prabhupada quotes in his Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjalila 9.30. Krishir bhu vachaka shabdo nascha nivritti vachaka tayor aikyang parang brahma krishna it yabadhiyate. The word krish is the attractive feature of the Lord's existence, and na means spiritual potency. When the verb krish is added to na, it becomes Krishna, which indicates the absolute truth. King Nriga offers the above prayers as he is about to leave the personal association of the Lord. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubi Evacha Patitanang Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So here, King Parikit is drinking to his ears the nectarian sound vibration which is vibrating from the mouth of Srila Shukadeva Goswami. And the result of hearing this transcendental empowered sound, which is in fact non-different from Krishna himself, Golokera Premadan Harinam Sankirtan, that when we're reading and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, it is Krishna being vibrated in Krishna that is entering into our ears and entering to our hearts and purifying our very souls. There's a very nice verse. Pibanti ye bhagatama atmasatam katamritam shravana puteshu sambritam punanti te vishya vidusha tashayam vrajanti tacharana sarorahantita. So pibanti means to drink. Pibanti ye bhagatama atmasatam, these wonderful descriptions of the Supreme Lord, katamritam shravana puteshu sambritam. So hearing, it is enter the holes of the ears. Punanti, katamritam shravana puteshu sambritam. Punanti means to become purified. Punanti te vishya vadushitashayam. That by hearing this sound entering the ear, punanti, we become purified from the polluted desires which are so deeply rooted within our heart. And the result, prajanti tacharana sarorahantikam, is that by this purification that we go back to the lotus feet of Krishna. In the Krishna book, the very first words from Prabhupada's mouth in Krishna book, and I'm going back now not to the first chapter or not to the introduction, but to the preface. The very first thing Prabhupada says, he quotes the very beautiful verse, Nivritti tarshar upagiya manad bhavosharach totra manobarama ka utama shloku gunanavadat puman virajeti vanapushuddha. So nivritti means to become freed from. Nivritti tarshar, all of the impurities within the heart. Upagiya manad by that which is sung. So this is what's taking place here, that King Parikit is hearing all this transcendental sound vibration, and his heart is becoming completely purified. Now, in addition to the fact that when we hear Shabda Brahma, spiritual sound, it is not only pleasing to hear and purifying to the heart, but it's also instructional, that we have to have some practical understanding of the philosophy. Because even though we're becoming purified, and even though so purifying, at the same time we have an enemy who is always trying to sort of stand in our way. In a sense, she's a friend, in another sense, right? But that's Maya. And in order to fight with Maya, we have a sword of knowledge. And this knowledge is sharpened by hearing this wonderful philosophy. And I'm sure every one of us apply it every day. We have to apply the philosophy. So in this wonderful narration of King Nriga, what sort of jumps out at me, what one particular aspect of the philosophy is the subject of karma. Because as we know, he was a great executioner of the process of karma kanda. I mean, he had it wired. He was giving in charity to very, very qualified Brahmins. He was giving cows that were young cows with one calf. And it's described that he was giving away so many cows that these cows were as numerous as particles of dust on the earth, or grains of sand, or as numerous as the stars in the sky or raindrops falling from the heavens. And not only was he giving so many cows to qualified brahmanas, but he was giving horses and elephants and chariots, and to the unmarried men, he was giving wives and maidservants and palaces and land and utensils and stocks of grain. King Nriga was so expert in this karma kanda, he built beautiful parks, and he dug wells, and he was doing so many good karma things. And I guess I should mention that karma, the subject of karma, is one that's very particularly dear to me. And as we know, that most people come to spiritual life, I love asking devotees, what brought you to Krishna consciousness? And the stories are all so transcendental. It's just so warming to the heart to hear how it was that Krishna attracted them in their particular path. And it seems to me that most of the devotees I talked to were pretty much in distress and pretty well burned out. Kali Yuga's been progressing along, and everyone's life is getting pretty rough. Now, that's okay to come for that reason, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Vidhi Bhajate Mam Janak Sukritin Arjuna. There's four types of men that come, but Sukritina, Krishna says, I consider this pious. Arto, Jigyasa, Artarti, Yanicha, Bharatarshava. The first mention is Arta. Those who are in distress. And it seems that the majority of devotees that have come, they were pretty well fried out by Maya. Now, my situation was a little different. I wasn't as exalted. I was actually thought the material world was pretty darn good. I was living here in Florida, in South Florida. I was playing music professionally, living on a little organic farm, which was, you know, back in the very, very early 70s. That was, you know, pretty avant-garde. Living with a very nice lady with long blonde hair. But then somebody ruined it all for me. That's Madan Mohan. You see, Madan Mohan and I were buddies since we were 10 years old. And we were sort of interested in spiritual things, but most of which we came in contact with was, you know, wasn't the real deal. Remember, there was one yogi that used to come every year, and Dadaji, was that his name, Madan? And one year he came, they announced Dadaji was coming, we went to go see him, but he looked quite a bit different. Come to found out that he fell down with his secretary or something. Anyway, it was bogus yogi after bogus yogi. So anyway, Madan had moved off to the West Coast, and he came in contact with the devotees, and he wanted to give me his mercy. But I think Madan knew that I wasn't really, deep in my heart, so inclined towards spiritual life in the deepest sense to really want to surrender to Krishna. So he kind of tricked me. He sent me this Bhagavad Gita, and Madan said, try to find some fault in this for me. And I was thinking, okay, I'll find it and save my buddy from the, you know, from the Hare Krishnas. That's gone a little bit too far. Spiritual things were good, but shaving your head, giving up drugs, sex, come on. And it was definitely over the top. So I thought, okay, I'll read this Bhagavad Gita and I'll find the faults. As soon as I started reading Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's words were so powerful and so cutting to the heart that I was immediately attracted. But what really sort of pierced my bubble was when I started reading about karma, because I thought I was actually doing pretty darn good in life. Life seemed good to me. But then Bhagavad Gita starts to tear away at karma. That even if one is so expert in karma that he's able to elevate himself to the most heavenly situations. I mean, we can't even conceive of how heavenly it is on the heavenly planets. Can you imagine that there are mangoes the size of elephants? Yes. They don't even have skin. And they don't even have seeds. And when these mangoes fall and hit the ground, so much juice is created, it creates rivers. I know you go tubing here in Alatra. Can you imagine tubing down mango juice? And when that mango juice mixes with the earthly elements, it forms all kinds of precious things, yeah. So, but in Gita, Krishna tears at it. He says, Te tang bhuktva svargalokam vishalam, that even after a great endeavor to get to the heavenly planets, Krishna says, Kshine punya, that when your punya, when your pious deeds, kshine, become exhausted, then marchalokam vishanti. And once again, we fall down. And also we read that really anything you obtain in this world, even in a liberated state, is all going to be temporary. That even if one is able to somehow elevate himself to this impersonal Brahman, the Brahmananda. And by the way, we read sort of little different things as we read globally in Prabhupada's books. In some places, the Brahmananda is described as absolutely, there's no pleasure at all, zero. In other places, it's described as infinitely more pleasurable than even the heavenly planets. So they're not contradictory, really. I mean, really, it is no pleasure compared to devotional service. But compared to the heavenly planets, it's infinitely greater. But even you go there, patanti adho nadadadushmarankara, patanti adho. Patanti means to fall, adho, downward. We once again even fall from this position. And unlike karma that becomes exhausted, and we have to leave, like a visa, right? You have a visa, and after a certain date, you got to get out. My understanding, it's really not that way in the Brahman. One may enter into the Brahman, but he falls. Not that he's forced to fall, but actually in time, he becomes lonely. Yeah? Void. Boring. Yeah, boring, lonely. I mean, it's not much happening there, not much going on. I mean, it may be nice, but it's just not our constitutional position. Those, therefore, we come back down again. Just like in Hawaii, we see the surfers. It's very big. People come from all over the world to surf in Hawaii. And they seem like they're, you know, enjoying like anything out there. But at the end of the day, they have to come out, isn't it? As soon as it's light out, they're out surfing. And they're out there until the last of light. And even a moonlight, they'll be out. But as soon as there's no light, they have to come back in again. The fish, that's their constitution. The fish can stay there, but not us. There's no taste of the lotus feet of Krishna, because Jivaraswara Pui Krishnara Nichidas, that is our eternal nature, is to engage in tasting the nectar of serving Krishna's lotus feet. Now, as we read in this particular chapter about King Nriga, there's another factor which we find out about karma. And that is that it's not like a checkbook. If you have, for example, if you have $1 million, let's say you have $1 million in accounts receivable, and you have $100,000 in accounts payable, what's your net worth? Anyone? $900,000. It kind of balances itself, right? You get to the balance. It's called balancing a checkbook, isn't it? It balances out. But what we find about karma doesn't balance like that. Another caveat, isn't it? Another caveat in karma, that you may execute very perfectly, as did King Nriga, but we also found out there's a problem. We all know the story. We won't go into that. But the one cow had wandered from one herd to another, and he'd given out one herd that had this one particular cow, and then he gave the same herd to someone else. But one cow inadvertently went to the other herd. It was given out twice. So, you know, that was an issue. So when King Nriga finally passed on and went before Yamaraj, Yamaraj was actually quite impressed with how much good karma he had. Yeah? Tremendous amount of good karma. But there was one fly in the ointment, and that was the cow. So Yamaraj asked him, "All right, what do you want first? The good karma or this little bit of bad karma?" So he chose that he would take the bad karma first, and thus he came as King Nriga. Now, karma, not a good path. So it's mentioned here in this verse that Krishna is the master of spiritual disciplines, and therefore Krishna comes and teaches us the ultimate spiritual discipline that we should be practicing. And we really see it since the beginning of time. For example, in the Satya Yuga, Krishna came as Kapila, and he taught Shankya philosophy. But what's most important to us is the fact that Krishna came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just 500 years ago to teach us the importance of chanting the holy name of the Lord, and how one obtains all perfection simply by chanting these wonderful, wonderful names of Krishna. Now, it's mentioned here about the meaning of Krishna. Krishna, we often explain this when we're speaking, Krishna is all attractive. I mean, there's nothing more, Krishna is so attractive that once we come in contact with Krishna, everything else totally pales, and we just can't give it up. And also, Rama is a reservoir of all pleasure. And Hare is a means of addressing Krishna or begging to be engaged in his devotional service. So we may explain like this, or we, depending upon who we're speaking to, we may explain that a Hare is actually Radharani, Hara. And Hara, which is the name of Radha, in the vocative case becomes Hare. So we can explain like this. And then, of course, some they may ask, well, so this is, okay, Hare, Radha, and Krishna, so they're married. So Well, not exactly. You see, it gets a little perplexing. You see, Radha's married, but Krishna isn't married. Which, you know, how do we... Anyway, so we generally keep it nice and simple. That. But anyway, more important or more a deeper level is understanding not so much what Krishna means, the Maha Mantra, what it means, but factually what it actually is. Because we know, Bina Tvam Nama Namino, it is none different from Krishna. So I'll give an example. If we were to say, we were to ask the question, what does lemonade mean? And if we were to go around the room, everybody would give something about what lemonade means. Well, it's water, H2O, and then lemon, there's some citric acid, yeah, and there's some type of sweetener, and it's usually in a tall glass. Can we all picture it? And there's a little condensation dripping down the side. Maybe it has a... We have them in Hawaii. I don't know if they have them here. It's like a long toothpick with an umbrella at the top. Has anyone seen those? They put those in drinks. Anyway, so we know what lemonade means. But what happens if I hand you a glass of lemonade and I pose the question, what does it mean? What does this mean? And you probably become a little bewildered. What do you mean what it means? It's not what it means now, it's what it factually is. And this is the Maha Mantra. It is non-different from Krishna. It's not so much what it means. Of course, we can define, in fact, what it means. But factually, on a deeper level, we can understand actually what Krishna is, the sound vibration. It is non-different from Krishna. And by chanting the holy name, we are actually we're actually purifying ourselves by being absorbed in Krishna through his transcendental name. Lord Chaitanya chanted on his fingers, and was absorbed in Krishna's name in this way. And the Goswamis, Sankhya Pur Bakanam Agani Natibi Kalavasani Kritao, that they were constantly chanting the holy name of Krishna, Sankhya, and counting. Sankhya Purvakanam Gandhi Kalavasani Kritao. Kalavasani Kritao. That Kala and Avasana Kritao. That they were constantly chanting the holy name of Krishna, completely absorbed. In the